everyone, and welcome back to The Imperfectionist, where we talk about silencing your inner critic, embracing messy parts of life, and unlocking the best version of you. In today's episode, guys, I am going to be answering some of your dilemmas. So you guys have submitted questions both on Instagram, you sent them into the email carla@golau.com, and a couple of comments as well on like Spotify and things like that. So thanks so much for everyone for like submitting them. So what I think we're going to do is we're going to answer some of the longer ones first, and then we're going to get into like some of the shorter ones. And then you guys also had some questions for me, so if we have time we will get to all of them, but we'll see how long it takes me. Hopefully my brain can keep up with these and I can get a decent answer for you guys. But hopefully, well, let's get into it anyway and see if I can help with a couple of these dilemmas from you guys. So the first one is, my partner is morbidly obese and health anxious, but can't get motivated to start health/weight loss journey. I'm terrified he'll die from weight complications, but I know I can't force him to change either. Any tips to help him? This is really difficult. And I think the best thing that I could do is to put it in my own context. So I was the morbidly obese partner in a relationship for about 7 years we were together before I lost weight. And Vincent was very, very supportive of me in general. Anytime I wanted to lose weight or kind of got that feeling, that like tiny bit of motivation, he was very supportive of me. But the most important thing is that he never judged me and never pushed me to do anything that I wasn't ready to do. And you cannot change somebody unless they want to change. That's just the end, like the be all and end all of it, unfortunately. Like, you can't shame somebody or bribe somebody or coerce or encourage somebody into change. You know, whether it's coming from a place of love and positivity or a place of negativity. Obviously, positivity has a little bit more of a chance at helping somebody, but really, unless that person wants to change for themselves, they can't. They won't. My recommendation would be to maybe lead by example. I think that always helps. So if you are eating really well, if maybe you are already, maybe you're exercising, taking care of yourself, and being kind to yourself and the way you speak to yourself and the way you speak to your partner as well. I think if you create a very supportive and loving environment, which I'm sure you probably are doing already, that will help them to feel loved and to feel supported. And maybe that might kind of at some point trigger something in them. The other thing I'd say is that when you mention here that your partner can't get motivated. So I think that this is something we're always looking for, is this like elusive motivation. This thing that's just going to pop up one day and we're going to say, okay, finally, I'm doing this. And honestly, that happens so rarely. As somebody who has been morbidly obese, the majority of my life, it was very rare that I ever did something that the motivation would kick in and then I would do something that was going to help me. It's actually more about consistency. So if they see you doing something consistently, like if you have a healthy routine that's consistent, like walking or going to the gym or whatever your routine is that's healthy, and being consistent with that and doing it like 7 days a week or however often you want to do it, it can maybe inspire them. And people have a tendency to change based on kind of inspiration or desperation. So hopefully you can inspire them to change. Something might happen, and maybe you can encourage them to go to the GP and speak to them, or to maybe have their like annual health checkup, maybe do their bloods or something like that. Maybe you decide, I'm going to do my bloods. Do you want to come with me and do it and see if there's any markers there of like cholesterol or something like that, that might give them that kind of little kick to make a change in their life. So I hope that helped. Okay, the next one is, dear Carla, I've been stuck in the same boring admin job for 6 years. I keep telling myself I'll apply for something better next month, but next month never comes. And honestly, I think I'm just scared. I feel like somehow I've tricked everyone into thinking that I'm good at what I do. And if I move somewhere else, then they'll realize that I'm a fraud. How do you deal with that voice that says, who do you think you are, every time you try to level up? Whew. I feel you. I was 11 years in my job before I moved on when I tried to I think it comes from a, like, almost like a place of like being stuck in your discomfort zone and not having any confidence in yourself and your, like, your abilities. I think one of the probably the best thing to do is to look at somebody else who you know recently who has maybe taken a new job, or somebody who, like, maybe one of your friends who's constantly like leveling up in their job, and ask them and speak to them about it and kind of model that behavior on them, even if you don't feel it. Like, okay, what does, it's like, I have a friend, Caroline, who's probably listening. Hi, Caroline. And she is like the queen of leveling up at her job. She is like, if she doesn't think she's being valued, she's like on to the next one. And it's unbelievable. Like, it's amazing. And it's something I would love more people, and especially more women, to have, to continue to seek growth in themselves. And like, if I was putting myself in your position, I would go to Caroline and be like, okay, how do you do this? How do you just like keep wanting to level up? I'd go maybe have a look at a couple of jobs that you would like. What like makes you excited? What is it that you want to do? And even if it's something that you maybe don't have that much experience in, maybe go and like take a course or do like an online course or something like that, so you feel a little bit more knowledgeable. But remember, the most important thing is that even somebody like Caroline, who's like goes hell for leather with it and goes on, still has limiting beliefs, still has, we all have those little voice in our head. It's like, oh, I don't know if I can do this, or maybe I'm not qualified for this. And we just have to break through that and go for it anyway. So if you can see that kind of behavior that other people have, like modeling that and breaking through that and just going for it, like, what's the worst that can happen? That's something I always think to myself. You don't get the job, or you get the job and it's not for you, and you can move on to something else then. And remember that when you start a new job, you are very rarely just sat down at a computer, or say it's a computer-based job, but you're very rarely just welcomed in and handed the keys and go, see you later. Like, there's so much training that's involved. There's so much, you know, the background information that you have to get. You're not expected to just come in and know something immediately. So just bear that in mind, that there is, it's okay not to know the answers to everything, and just give it a go. Just model that behavior on somebody who, like, even take like Caroline, for example. Even if you don't have a Caroline in your life, like, think of like who would do this, what type of person would do this, apply for the jobs and go for it and see how you get on. Okay, I really liked this question. I have a friend who constantly makes passive aggressive comments about my goals, and I don't know if I'm being too sensitive, or is it time for me to put some distance between us? How do you know when a friendship is no longer healthy? I loved this question, because I think that this is something that comes up a lot, and I am a firm believer that people are in your life for a reason, season, or a lifetime. And I think I've discussed that with numerous people on the podcast, numerous guests that we've had on. And what I think happens with a lot of people who make that kind of comment is that they're trying to keep you in the box that they are happy with you being in. People get very comfortable with us fitting into a certain box that they are comfortable with us being in. Now, this happened to me multiple times where I was the naysayer. I was the person making passive aggressive comments, because I was comfortable with somebody being a certain way. And if they wanted to change, it made me uncomfortable, because it basically kind of shines a light or holds a mirror up to my behavior at the time it did. And I had to kind of look at myself, and I didn't want to do that. I was very, even as I said in the last question, I was very comfortable in my discomfort, and I didn't want to change, and I didn't want to make any changes. And I was just happy with things being the way they are, because, you know, change is different and it makes us all kind of a bit like scared and weird. And I think sometimes a friend can do that. You know, when you want to change, when you make a change in your life and you no longer fit into that box that they're comfortable with, it can result in them, without them even being conscious of it, having kind of those negative feelings towards your goals or towards you. My advice would be, like, yes, absolutely. Like, how do you know when a friendship's no longer healthy? You can kind of, if you're asking that question, you might already know the answer. And it's okay to no longer be friends with people. You don't have to make it like a big breakup or anything like that. It can just be, people will distance from each other naturally over time, and that's totally okay. But also, I think one of the things that I learned, especially with weight loss, is to keep your goals to yourself for as long as possible, unless it's with people that you really trust and that you know you won't have that reaction from, because it can derail your progress. It can derail you, and it can trigger something within you then and make you feel like, oh, I shouldn't be doing this. Whereas if you just tell people that you really trust, or you keep it to yourself, you're very steadfast in your journey then on whatever goal it is, whether it's career, whether it's your health, whether it's relationships, whatever goal that you're working towards, even like a marathon or something like that. If you're much further along in your journey, as opposed to at the start where you're kind of on shaky ground, it's easier then to tell people. So if they had passive aggressive comments, it's not going to shake you as much when you're further down the line. So hope that helped. Hi, Carla. I have this terrible habit. I feel guilty taking a lunch break. I work from home, and if I step away for 20 minutes, I feel like the ghost of productivity past is judging me. Meanwhile, my coworkers send emails at 9 p.m. and act like it's normal. You're right, it's not normal. I am one email away from losing it and responding with, as per my last 5 breakdowns, how do you actually set boundaries without feeling like a criminal? Ooh. This is probably something that I struggle with a bit, especially as somebody who works from home or who's a freelancer or self-employed. I kind of have this tendency to be like, it's okay if I go shopping, like go to Tesco or something in the middle of the day, because I don't have set hours. And it's perfectly okay for you to take a lunch break. I think there is this horrendous hustle culture that is just the busier you are and the more stressed you are, therefore the more valuable and important you are, which is completely untrue. And that we should be in a system where we are allowed to take rests and it's encouraged to do so. But if it's not in your work, in your environment, I know that can be really tricky. But I think what you're doing here is setting those boundaries. Like for me, one of the things that I do to set boundaries is because I don't have those set hours, I have certain times where I do not look at my phone. I have areas in my house that I don't look at my phone. So I think for you, it's something similar. So maybe like when you sit down at your desk, like if it's 9 till 12 and then you're taking an hour break, you're okay to take the hour break. You deserve it. It's part of your contract, I'm sure. And then you go back to your desk and then you finish. When you finish the workday, you put your laptop down and you mute your notifications if they're on your phone. It's the same thing that I have to do. I have to mute, because otherwise I could spend hours just answering, comments or emails and things that come in from my team or from like people as well and followers. And I have to set boundaries, because you have to be your own person as well. You have to refill your own cup. So I think like the fact that you said I have a terrible habit is taking a lunch break. But I think the habit, like feeling guilty, I don't know. I think you set your boundaries and be steadfast in your resolve and what you're doing, because it's totally okay to take breaks and it should be something that more of us do. And I think if somebody else wants to email at 9 p.m., that's their own thing. That's down to them, and you got to do yourself and be okay with it. I'm sorry, that's probably not the most helpful one, but I hope that helped in some way. This person said, "Hi, Carla. How do I stop feeling like a total potato when I scroll through Insta and everyone else is waking up at 5 a.m. and journaling and meditating and running marathons, starting businesses, solving world hunger before breakfast? Meanwhile, I'm just trying to drink enough water and remember my passwords. Does that mean I'm failing, or am I being hard on myself?" The most important thing to remember here is that whatever you see on Instagram is the highlight of somebody's, like a snapshot of a highlight of what they want you to see, not the whole truth. It is very rare that somebody will be vulnerable and show everything on Instagram. And even those who do, like I would like to think that I'm myself, like I will show the hardships as well, but you don't see everything. You will never know the full picture of what's going on for somebody. You know, that people will think that they know me inside out, but they don't. People will think, like, I know, like, my first guest on the podcast, Melanie Murphy, like, we talked a lot about this, and that trying to be vulnerable and showing the highs and the lows as, like, influencers, and I use that term loosely, but honestly, there are so many other struggles that you don't see, and that, like, I might see with Melanie just a few of them because I'm a friend of hers and vice versa. But then you might also not see all of the other things that we hide from our friends. And even not hide is probably not the right word, but, like, we keep to ourselves because, like, generally people are quite private. They don't share everything. So when you see, you know, somebody getting up and, like, say for me, for example, like, I wake up early. I do some journaling. I don't journal every single day. I don't meditate every day. And I'm certainly not running any marathons. There's a couple of things that I'll do consistently, but then the rest of the day, like, could be an absolute shit show, to be perfectly honest with you. And you might not see that. So you might just see my walk in the morning, and you might see a nice outfit that I put on and some lipstick that I got or something like that. But then you might not see, like, that the cat's vomited everywhere, and that, like, all of the stuff, like, there's no money in the account to cover this bill or something like that, you know? So you never know what's going on with somebody. So just always bear in mind that no matter what you see on Instagram, it is a minute time, like, space of time that people want to share. It's not like for the rest of it, it's probably like 23 hours and 55 minutes a day of, like, you know, other crap going on that you don't get to see. So, and one of the things is, like, the comparison is the root of all evil. So please don't compare your full life to, like, 5 minutes of somebody's day. I'm going to go through some of the shorter questions that came in. We put a question box up on the Instagram a while ago. So these ones came in. I'm just going to kind of do them as, like, a quick fire if I can, she says, because I'm always so short-winded with things. But let's give it a go anyway. Right. First one. How do I say no without feeling like I need to submit a full apology letter and a gift basket? My sister has an amazing saying that no is a full sentence. When I heard that, which I've heard many times, and when I took on, it's very true. No is a full sentence. You do not need to jade your responses to anything to anybody. And jade stands for justify, argue, debate, or explain. No is a full sentence. You can be nice about it. You can say no, thank you, or no, I'm sorry, that won't be possible. But you don't need to give reasons. And it's interesting, when you don't give reasons, people don't tend to ask for a reason. So, and you just move on. Right, the next one. I have a huge project due, but instead of starting, I de-clean my oven. Any tips with procrastination disguised as productivity? Yes, it is an avoidance technique, I think, something that I am incredibly good at. I like to avoid doing things that I find really difficult and do other things that make me feel like I'm being productive, but actually I'm just avoiding. Any tips to deal with it is to not necessarily write a list, but, like, tackle one part of it. Like, get a quick win in first. So if there's, like, a project that you have to do, look through what the project is and, like, what's one quick win you can do? Like, what's one step? And just focus on one step at a time, not on, like, the whole thing. Because I think when you have to focus on the whole thing, it can be really overwhelming. But if you just focus on one thing as a quick win, and then go, okay, well, I'm going to do one more thing, and just do it, like, chunk at a time. Like, how do you eat an elephant? It's one bite at a time. Coming up with some dodgy sayings here.
I've never heard that one before.
Have you not? I think it's a Body Slims one. There'll be loads of, they all come in. They all get stuck in your brain. Okay. Whenever someone compliments me, I downplay it or make a joke. How do you accept a compliment without awkwardly self-destructing? So, we had a guest on a couple of weeks ago, Cathy O'Connor, the amazing stylist, and she mentioned how she, in her line of work, like, working with women, they constantly downplay all of their, like, the nice attributes. They kind of highlight the negatives, and in do so end up downplaying the positives as well. It's like kind of like a defense mechanism almost, I think, that we have. Like, it's like, oh no. And also, I'm going to assume that this person is Irish. you know, it's a very Irish, and I know it's a big English thing as well, is to not accept compliments. But it's something that I had to train myself to learn to do, is to just to say thank you, or that's nice of you, thanks. You know, and it's, it feels really strange. It's like in the last, like, or the no thing, you know, when you don't need to give an explanation, it feels really awkward at the start. But when you do, and you just say, oh, thanks so much. Yeah, I really like this dress. You know, it's, you don't have to downplay it. It's like that pennies hunting thing, you know, like, oh, thanks, pennies, €5. It's, we don't need to downplay our success. I think it's okay to be okay with liking yourself. And I think we need to get more comfortable with being okay with liking ourselves, or liking something about us. And compliments will help us hopefully to do so. And I know a lot of us don't believe in the compliments, but somebody's not lying. Like, they're not all Regina Georges in this world. People are actually just complimenting you. Accept it. Say thank you and move on. It actually comes to mind there. We had Claire McKenna on the podcast as well. We were talking about how being full of yourself is a bad thing. Why is being full of yourself a bad thing? Why are we raised to have this idea that, oh, she's so full of herself? That's a terrible thing. Like, how, like, oh, somebody has some sort of self-confidence, we must tear them down. And that's definitely an Irish thing. But I think we need to embrace being full of ourselves as an okay thing. It's not a negative thing. It's okay to like yourself. It's okay to love yourself. It's not a negative thing. This is actually, the next question is kind of related in a certain way. I want to start posting my art online, but I thought of strangers judging me and makes me want to hide under a blanket. How do I push through? I totally resonate with this as well, because when I wanted to start sharing things online, I was afraid that people were going to find my Instagram page, which is also ridiculous, because what's the point in having it if people don't find it? Like, if you are creating something and then you're sharing it with the world, whenever somebody puts themselves on like the precipice of something, or stands up and says, I made this, or stands kind of out of the crowd and does something, it can make us open to other people's judgment. But I think what we need to focus on are the benefits and the positives that we can gain from this. Like, first of all, if you want to share your art online, I would imagine it's so that you can spread your art and you can maybe like touch somebody or influence somebody or inspire somebody, or maybe to sell it. And that's kind of the what we want to happen. And maybe it's about connecting with other people, maybe connecting with other artists. My piece of advice is feel the fear and do it anyway. My very first post that I did on Instagram, a friend found it. The person I was probably most afraid of finding it, that they would be judgy, ended up finding it and was really complimentary. And I was like, okay, well, if that's like the first one, she was like one of my first like 5 followers. And I was like, okay, well, she's found it. So it doesn't, like, who cares? And it's interesting. I couldn't care less now about like anybody finding something or having an opinion on something that I've put up. And the people that I was worried about as well back then, like 5 years later, I couldn't give 2 hoots about, to be perfectly honest with you. So just don't let the opinion of others hold you back from shining your light. That's exactly what I'm saying. And then the final of our quick fire ones is it ever too late to completely reinvent yourself? Asking for a friend who's 42. Well, we just had Kirsty, like, you know, on the podcast recently. Kirsty was talking about how she totally reinvented herself from like HR corporate, you know, America, working for an oil company. It was an oil company, I think, to wearing Next suits and driving a Mercedes, to now having an entirely different persona. But the real her, the person who was always in her, that was like shoved down or was kind of discouraged in her, and how she allowed that person to come out, and how she completely reinvented her entire life, getting fired as this like monumental thing, and actually using it as a catalyst for change for herself, to reinvent herself. And I completely reinvented myself in my 30s. Like, you're only 42. You are very young and you can totally do it. And I've seen people reinvent themselves all through their lives at different ages. And I think reinvention is kind of like evolution of yourself. It's like becoming like version, you know, 3.2 of you or something like that, you know, and every time there's a new version of you, it can be scary to share it, but you've also evolved. And I think it's really important that you allow yourself to do that and allow yourself to flourish. And again, don't hide your light or dim your light for anybody. So go for it. It's never too late. Okay, so the final section we're going to move on to is questions for Carla. So these are ones that came in both in the comments on Spotify. They came in through DMs and in through the question box on Instagram as well. So I'm just going to throw them in and answer some of them. God, I hope I can. My brain is working enough to answer questions about myself as well. But right. First one is, Carla, what's one limiting belief you still struggle with after everything you achieved? Whew. I think one limiting belief that I still I was going to say it's like that I'm not good enough. It's more like it's momentary. Like there will be flashes of it and I will hear it, but I will still push through. I will still do everything I can to get through that. Does that make sense? Like I don't let it hold me back, basically. I might still have the limiting belief, but then I will do actions to either prove differently to myself, or just I will do the actions and then that will quieten the voice because I'm like, yeah, no, I am good enough to do this. That's something that it's like a constant practice. This question then was kind of on a similar vein. This came in Spotify. It said, my question is, when Body Sims came to you and asked you to take on the head coach, did you jump at it? Or were there doubts? I totally believe you are the best person for the role and wish you all the best. Thank you very much. Yeah, there were doubts. There were doubts. I knew I had to say yes. The opportunity was too good to turn down. It was one of those opportunities where it was like, oh, this has presented itself. This is life changing. And I would be a fool to turn it down. But I knew that there were very big shoes to fill and there were a lot of opinionated people and there was definitely doubts and there will always be doubts in my mind. I think it's, you know, like I will always make sure I will do the best though. So I am confident though in my decision that I did it. I know that it was the right decision. I know that I am at the moment the best person for the job and that because I know how much effort I have put in over the last year and how much work has gone into it. And I'm confident in myself. So yes, there were doubts, but they are dissipating. I kind of like in the same way, like I kind of self-actualize. I kind of go, no, hold on. Look what you can do. I do the things and it proves to myself that I'm capable of it. So even if there is that kind of like little doubt about anything, I'll always kind of go back and, you know, prove to myself that I can. It's not even like a conscious proving to myself. It just happens because I just don't let the doubts control anymore. I just literally quieten them. Just be like, shh, I hear you, but I'm not listening to you. I'm not interested right now. I'm doing my own thing. The next one is, what's the next vision you have for yourself? The next vision. I think right now I'm pretty much riding a very brand new cycle in my life between the podcast and Body Slims. There's been a lot of change in 2025. So I think I'm just allowing this to do its thing. But I think seeing where I can bring both projects is kind of where, like, what's important to me, like what I can do with both, because I'm so passionate about both of them. Then there was a question, was there ever a time you almost gave up on something because of negative self-talk? There actually have been so many things that I've given up on in my life because of negative self-talk, like not in the last 5 years, but there are many, many things that I would have tried to do, like flamenco dancing is one of them. I started and quit. The guitar, singing, many career switches, attempts at changing career because I just didn't have the confidence and I had really, really limiting negative self-talk. And I just, there would be many things that I gave up on. nothing anymore that I would almost give up on because of negative self-talk. I can honestly say that, like, I will always push through now. I'll come through, I'll find a way to do it. This is kind of a nice little random one. It's like places I want to travel to. I really want to go on a safari. That's one of the things I would love to do next. Not for a while yet, because I'm very aware that it's quite spinny. So it'll be a while before I can do that. And I'd also really love to go to Japan. I've never been to Asia. I've been to the States a load of times and I've been all over Europe, but I've never been to Asia. So I'd really like to go to Asia. But I think the next place we're going to be going to is France, because my partner's from France and we have to go see family. Things like that. So that's probably the next place I'm going to. How have your relationships or friendships changed as you've grown into the version of yourself who believes she deserves good things? This is interesting. So this kind of goes back to that dilemma question that I had from somebody before. It's like, you know, when you start to change, that people start to act differently towards you. So there's, in terms of friendships, I think one of the biggest changes was when I stopped drinking. That was a big change in my friendships and my circle, my social circle. And it got a lot smaller. And that was strange. But there are people who I would drink with, like go out drinking with and go like to parties and things like that with, who are still friends now. And, you know, that we had both like friendships outside of the pub and in the pub. So like some of those friends I kept really strong. But some of them, like a lot of them would have dissipated, like when I didn't go to the pub, like every Friday and Saturday night, and you wouldn't see those people anymore. And they were like, I realized they were kind of more drinking buddies than anything. And then, but a lot of like, in terms of like my weight loss and like being a more confident and going person, it's cemented a lot of my friendships. And like, I've had to kind of introduce myself or reintroduce myself to people, which has been strange. And you have to create new boundaries with people, and people will either support it or they won't. And the majority, like I've lost friends, but I have also had some amazing friendships grow. I've also made so many more friends in the last couple of years being myself, which is something that Kirsty also mentioned, and Kirsty being one of them. Like, I only know Kirsty like since just before I got pregnant with Brannock. So like 4 years, and I speak to her every single day. And it's when you are authentically yourself, I think that that's when you meet the people who are authentically for you. And people who I thought maybe I wouldn't have been friends with before, I'm incredibly close with now. And in terms of relationship, it's just grown and strengthened. Like, I'm very lucky that Vincent saw in me the person that I didn't see in me. And to be the person that he always knew I could be, has just cemented our relationship and like made us closer and grow in love. So very lucky 11 years on that we're still probably a lot more in love than we were before. So yeah. And I think when you treat yourself really well, you also display to the world how you want to be treated. And some people will be okay with that and some people won't. And that's okay. And you'll find your tribe when you act from your real authentic self. Somebody else asked me for my morning and evening routines. Now, in fairness, it depends on the day. It depends on a lot of things. My evening routine tends to be very similar. Dinner around 6-ish. If I have to have a shower, I'll do it before that, because I like to dry my hair naturally. It takes a long time. And then I will get, like after dinner, get Brannock ready for bed, get my walking stuff out for the next morning, put Brannock to bed. Either myself or Vincent will do like the nighttime routine. Once he's in bed, then I like take my makeup off. I always take my makeup off. I think in my entire life, there's only been like 2 or 3 nights where I've ever slept in makeup. That has been something that was drilled into me as a child. It's very important. So anybody who sleeps in their makeup, I'm encouraging you, even just micellar water and a moisturizer, that's all you need. But I'll get my walking stuff out, take makeup off, wrap my hair in my silky sausage, into bed. I would love to say I'm watching, or I'm reading or journaling, but honestly, I'm probably watching Disney vlogs or some TV show on my iPad or something like that. Like, let's face it. Sometimes I go through phases. It depends. But I know I'm also, I know I'm better in myself when I like write my gratitude journal or I read, but or I put on a meditation to sleep. But I'm most likely watching some kind of vlog, or I'm currently watching Breeders, which I'm really enjoying, although it does make me a bit stressed because I'm like, it feels a bit like real life, to be honest with you. And then in the morning, alarm goes off, out for a walk, come back. Depends on the day, whether I'm going to town, whether I'm staying at home. It depends on what I'm doing, but it's getting the house ready, getting little man up, getting the big man up, getting the cats fed. And then it's not very interesting, to be honest with you. It's just a really boring morning routine. It's just life. There's nothing special or spectacular that happens in it. And then hopefully, normally if I'm out, I tend to do like my morning pages. I tend to bring them with me. I don't tend to them if I'm at home. It's weird. When I'm out, I tend to like make that time for myself. But at home, I also find that I'm end up not actually sitting down at my desk till much later. I think I'll answer maybe one more. Here we have like a little quick fire E1. Somebody said tea or coffee. Coffee always. Am I a morning person or a nighttime person? I am absolutely a morning person. I'm useless at nighttime. And I'm an overthinker or go with the flow. I don't think those two, there's like an either or for those two. I feel like I'm not a go with the flow. Let's face it, I'm not a go with the flow. But I'm not always an overthinker either. I'm a planner. And if things don't go that way, I'm not like type A. Like if things don't go a certain way, which they never do, let's face it, that's life. Like, yeah, embrace the imperfection. You know, it's the whole point of the podcast. But I think, yeah, I'm not an overthinker anymore. Unless something goes wrong, then I'm an overthinker. That's very different. But with go with the flow, no, I'm not. I like a plan. I like a list. I have my Notion app with my little to-do lists, and I like a tick. So guys, I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the podcast. I know it was a bit different. There was so many questions. If you guys would ever like to submit another one, you can always email carla@golau.com. You can pop it in the comments on Spotify and we'll open up question boxes again and just gather them, or you can send us a DM on the Imperfectionist Pod on Instagram. And until the next time, guys, please don't forget to show up for yourself and embrace the messy imperfection people that we are. Or something a little bit better than that. See, messy imperfection. Love you guys. Thanks so much for listening. Chat to you soon.